Thank you. We'll get going with the questions, but I just wanted to mention to everybody, I'm going to bring up the slide with all the website information, and we will share the report and the executive summary and everything once it's available through the Freight Planning Listserv, and the slide that I'm bringing up now will have the address to join if you're not already a member. A lot of great freight information gets sent out. It's also the way that information is primarily distributed about the upcoming Talking Freight seminars. So I'm just going to start from the top with the questions that came in. Let me see here. Okay. Let's see, the first one is, do Europeans have a regional, mega-regional approach for each corridor? Are all countries and regions concerned by a corridor working together?
They do now. That has been one of the, this is Eric, by the way, that is part of the reason why they've had much discussion in terms of identifying the core and the comprehensive network, which they, many of the corridors that are primary corridors are those that have cross borders. And when you have cross borders, it automatically becomes a regional concept of how you start thinking about transportation. I'll toss it over to others who may have any comments, but yes, I can probably say, safely say, this was regional and international concept of planning wasn't necessarily in play several years ago. Now they have, through the EU and this 10T network, they are thinking much broader.
We saw several examples of projects that one member country thought was critical and even built their part of what they thought was a critical regional freight infrastructure, and it ended at the national boundary because the country that it went into did not place the same amount of priority on it. And so this idea behind core and comprehensive that they're entering into, their goal was to eliminate that, hopefully have a much more unified approach to freight planning from the state forward.
Okay, thank you. We have two related questions that I'll read together. How do the prices for moving freight in Europe compare to freight rates in the U.S.? And then related to that, what is the EU price of diesel for trucks and barge via the U.S. prices?
I don't necessarily, I didn't look at the price of diesel while I was over there. It's amazing when you are over there and you have so many options in terms of movement between train, plane, and many other options other than vehicle, you kind of stop looking at gas prices, which is a very pleasant experience given today's environment. I will tell you that trucks still carry the bulk of the freight in the EU, and that's the same it is here. I mean, trucks carry 78% of the goods here, and that figure probably won't change much. But yes, there is much of the freight is still carried, if it's not carried on barge shipping, it's still carried on trucks. So, and we all know that diesel prices and the price of fuel over there in general is much more expensive than it is here in the States. And that's only because the freight, moving things by on rail is why we laud their efforts to, applaud their efforts to move as much as they can on to the rail. It is just not truly there yet because they do have the harmonization issues of electrification and the gauge differences. So when you're moving freight and just-in-time delivery, you can't do it by rail there yet.
And I think we had someone in there commented actually that they believe that trucking in the EU is rather cheap and because of the competition, even though the gas prices and tolls are higher.
Well, there isn't competition. I mean, much competition. Well, there's competition between the truckers, yes.
Okay. How is waterway short sea shipping taxed or subsidized?
You know, I really can't recall how that's actually subsidized. Renee or Annie, do you remember, do you recall that?
Eric, they do have a Marco Polo program to try to move some of the freight onto the short sea shipping programs, and that has some subsidies with it, but I'm not aware how much they are, and I'm not sure of their tax rate either. But we did hear over there that on their waterway, especially in their inland waterway system, there are complications, again, between these countries of, you know, who has the finances to take care of the maintenance and operations of the locks and dams or the depth of the river to allow for the transport. And there's some coordination problems across the countries, the various countries, with that as well.
Okay. Next question. Do EU truckers generally overnight at home or in motels? And if not, are there special facilities like electrified truck stops to minimize idling?
I don't know if I can answer that question. I guess all that depends on the industry itself. I mean, from what we're seeing here in the United States, we're seeing there is a dearth of drivers, actually actual people to get into the cab, particularly those that do long haul, and most of those senior drivers want to just do overnights at their home, you know, daytime deliveries. I don't know exactly what the impact is or what the trends are in the trucking industry in the EU in terms of, are they seeing the same thing that we are, and are they having a difficulty with getting drivers?
Okay, and also on the environmental front, did you observe what sort of partnership, if any, exists in the EU between the environmental and transportation agencies to work on carbon reduction goals?
I will tell you, I know the much has gone into developing the comprehensive and the core network. I will say that those are exercises that hadn't been done in a vacuum. But it is a very different approach there, and it's interesting in that as we went and visited with all the countries and we sat down with mostly Ministry of Transport officials in various forms and some of the tolling authorities, they didn't need anybody from the environmental community to basically tell them this is what we want to do in terms of reducing the carbon footprint. When I said before, this is something that they truly believe this, and they didn't need anybody environmental to tell them. They believe it, and they were going to use transportation as a vehicle to get there to reach some of their goals.
Well, but let's go back to the Port of Rotterdam. The reason behind their forced modal shift was because of the environmental impact statement they had done for the expansion of the port.
Right.
So that modal shift was a mitigation measure. I think what we find a little bit different here was there they had set overall national goals, meaning both at the EU level as well as the individual country level, for reducing their carbon footprint. And all agencies were actively working individually and together to reduce the carbon footprint. So, taking the case that Eric mentioned of Germany, where tolls were based on the emission level of the truck. And what that had resulted in, whereas over 50% of the trucks, when the toll went into place, were your worst polluting or your dirtier diesel engines, within 5 years, the majority of that fleet had changed over to being clean diesel, cleaner emitting engines in just 5 years as a result of the toll differential. So I think it was a case of the transportation agencies reaching out to meet their country or EU set goals for reducing the carbon footprint.
Okay. Another question, can anyone elaborate on the Rotterdam new terminal leases required mode split of 35% truck, 45% barge, and 20% rail?
I guess much of that has Renee alluded to much of that in her response, and I don't know, Ray, do you want to talk a little bit more about it?
I can. It was definitely as a result of the Port of Rotterdam wanting to be accepting of even larger of the ocean-going freight vessels. so they had were literally filling in the bay. And so as a result of that environmental impact statement, one of the things that the Port of Rotterdam experiences is, remember that large part of the freight movement in Europe is still by truck. So they are doing a lot of interesting things at the Port of Rotterdam. Example, they right now at the Port of Rotterdam have a pilot project going on where they pay people if they do not travel on the main highway in and out of the Port of Rotterdam during the peak period. So, if you volunteered to be in the program, you were sent a letter and asked to participate in the program, you gave them your license plate number. If your license plate is not photographed on the main highway during the peak periods of travel on that main highway in and out of the Port of Rotterdam, at the end of the month, you are mailed a check. I don't remember, I don't know if Eric or Ernie remember the amount, but it was like a dollar a day or something. And so you could make money by not traveling on the main interstate in and out of that port. It was a pilot project, a report to follow. But that is how concerned they are by the emission levels being produced by the trucks coming and going from the Port of Rotterdam. So this on the new terminal leases, they are required to put more of their freight, once it's offloaded off of these large ocean-going freighters, more onto barge and rail than what currently happens. I think it was slightly over 50% of the freight that came off the large ocean-going vessels was actually being moved out by truck. And so for these new terminals, they have to commit to more going by barge, which is definitely much more possible in Europe.
You know, and I think it's even with renewed contracts. The next time contracts come up with existing tenants, they'll have to adopt that as well. If I remember hearing that correctly.
Okay. Do you know how the private sector, both shippers and carriers, have reacted to the emphasis on reducing carbon footprint?
I don't believe we had much of an opportunity to speak with much of the shippers and the carriers. I know we had a conversation with the association that oversaw much of the that railroads actually paid into to have representation at the EU. The railroaders were supportive of the overall concept, of course, because it looks like business to them. But they are—they were one of many partners in helping to develop what was defined as a core and comprehensive network. So much like anything, when you have many cooks in the kitchen, you know, you always fight over the ingredients, but everybody sort of agreed to the overall dish. But I did not have any particular direct conversations with any of the shippers or the carriers. I mean, unless Ernie or Renee wanted to chime in.
Certainly wasn't brought up in any of the conversations as one of their stumbling blocks and one of their obstacles.
Okay. I don't see any questions typed in, but we still have plenty of time, so please feel free to continue typing in questions. At the same time, I will ask the operator to give instructions for those of you who are on the phone. If you do want to ask a question over the phone, I don't know how many people we actually have on the phone lines, but if the operator could give instructions on how to ask questions over the phone.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And there are no questions at this time.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I think it looks like we have a few people typing in some questions now, and it sounds like we might have some of the audio cutting in and out, and I will look into what might be causing that. But in the meantime, we'll give people a few more minutes to ask questions, but what I'll do is, let's see here. this is actually a comment, but I'll read it out and see if any of the presenters wanted to comment on it as well. Many shippers who are partners in EPA SmartWay Transport Partnership cite pressure from the EU governments they deal with as one reason that they are participating in SmartWay here. And I don't know if any of our presenters wanted to comment on anything based on that.
Only from a standpoint more at the 30,000-foot level, they had a much more accepting philosophy or culture towards accepting some of these changes. When asked about accepting of the tolls on emissions, accepting of some of the changes that were coming from an environmental standpoint, the response was, well, it's our obligation, it's our responsibility to do this. It wasn't one of, well, it's being forced on us. It was definitely much more acceptance of doing these things than what we've seen here in the United States. This was my second scan to Europe, and I have to admit, on the first scan, it was very similar. When asked about congestion pricing in London, when asked about some of the forces of, like if you buy a car in Denmark, you pay three times the amount of the car in taxes in Denmark than what the actual car costs. So if you pay $10,000 for a car, you're going to pay another $20,000 in taxes. And they were much more accepting of doing this from an internet standpoint.
Okay, thank you. If you think of more questions, please feel free to type them in. I'm going to go ahead and read some of the closing information right now, but we still have time, so I could go back to ask some more questions. But I do want to thank all three of our presenters, and thank you everybody for attendance today. As I mentioned at the beginning, the webinar was recorded. The recording, the PowerPoint presentations, and a transcript will all be posted online within the next 2 weeks or so, and I'll send out an email once it is available. As a reminder, if you are an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today, please make sure you are either signed in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, just make sure that your name gets typed into the chat box, and you can even send it privately to me. I encourage everybody who attended today to download the evaluation form that's in the file share box in the bottom right of the screen. Fill it out and send it to me. We're always looking for suggestions on future topics. We're actually planning for the July through December seminars of this year. So if you have any topic ideas, and we're always looking for feedback on the webinars to, any way we can improve them. The next seminar will be held on May 18th and will be about clean ports. The seminar is currently available for registration, and you can go to the link showing on the slide on your screen right now. It's the third to bottom bullet on the slide, and you can go to that page and register for the May 18th webinar. There's also a little bit more description on that website about what will be covered. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. The information about future talking freights is distributed through that listserv, as well as some other interesting freight registration. It doesn't appear that we have any other questions, so we're going to go ahead and end a little bit early today. But again, thank you to all the presenters, and we will make sure that scan report gets announced to everybody once it is available. So thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.